Before we start the show, I want to thank the thousands of you, the thousands who have read This Book Will Make You Dangerous. Many of you have told me that the book's unique way of exploring fear, confidence, and purpose has had a lasting impact, that it's much easier for you to get clarity and direction about what really matters and what you want to do in this lifetime. It's also amazing to hear that quite a few of you have read it multiple times and even bought copies for friends. So thank you again. Just in case you weren't aware, I created a free companion video course for the book. And in these videos, I walk you through the big takeaways and practices from each chapter. And I even cover some extra stuff that's not included in the book. Information on how to access the course is in newer versions of the book. And if you own an older version of the book and you don't know how to access the course, just hit me up via the contact form at triplanier.com and we'll get you all set up. And one last thing, if you're one of the thousands who have already read the book, please consider leaving an honest review on Amazon so that others can decide if it's right for them. Again, thank you so much for reading This Book Will Make You Dangerous. And now let's start the show.
You are listening to The New Man Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier. He is joined in the studio by the show's producer, Casey Capshaw.
Do you find yourself dating the same type of girl over and over again, only to fall into the same trap over and over again? Have you noticed that no matter how well your intentions may be, you still find yourself repeating patterns that drain your personal or professional life? And are you the guy that has a beat on what your issues are, but you still can't seem to do much to change? This week, Bill Harris, yes, the Bill Harris, is on the show to tell us how finding lasting success is no further away than getting to know the thoughts in our minds. Welcome to The New Man. Today's guest is a pillar in the field of personal development. He's the founder of Centerpoint Research Institute. He developed a product called Holosync, which we'll learn more about in a minute. And he was one of the featured teachers of The Secret. So welcome to the show, Bill Harris.
Hello. Glad to be here.
One thing I get about your work is that the brain and the mind have a much deeper impact on our well-being. From your perspective, what is the average guy missing?
Well, I think what you're saying is true. The brain and the mind do have a huge impact. I think the way that I would frame it, though, is to say that what's really important is awareness. There are many, many things that that we do that are, to some degree or other, automatic.
Okay.
Most of what contributes to that success or the failure, if that's what happens, is going on out of our awareness. There are all kinds of internal processes that are between our intention and the result. And as long as we're not aware of those internal processes, then they just operate automatically.
Can you give me an idea of like what some of those processes are that we're just not even aware of?
Well, one of them is our beliefs. Or the basic premises we have about who we are, what the world is, what other people are like.
Okay.
Most people, if they sit down and decide that they're going to make an exhaustive list of the main important things that they believe, most of what they end up with, they weren't aware of before they made that list.
It's all under the hood. It's we're not even aware that those things are filtering how we see the world, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And not only are these things operating out of our awareness, most of what we believe is not only out of our awareness, but also we've never really examined it to look at whether or not it really is true or whether it really serves us to go through life believing it.
So what are some examples of these, like, I would call these the core beliefs that we don't even realize are running the show? Give me some examples of some of those.
A lot of people, maybe they believe that life is basically unfair and that other people have advantages that I don't have.
Mm.
If somebody believes that, First of all, they have a good reason for believing that. They have evidence that it's true. Things have happened in their life that have caused them to develop that as a belief. The problem with evidence, however, is that no matter what you believe, you will gather evidence to help you prove it. This is in psychology, they would say that beliefs are self-fulfilling prophecies,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that when you believe something, you figure out a way, often quite unconsciously, to prove to yourself that what you believe is actually true. Now, down the street, there might be somebody else that believes the opposite, and they figure out a way to make that seem to be true. What I often tell people is, and this is, seems a little counterintuitive at first, is that if you're believing things because of the evidence you have, you're sort of missing the point. Because regardless of whatever evidence you have, if you believe something that is not resourceful for you, in other words, something that is going to lead to an outcome that you don't want, then using evidence as your justification for believing it is not a good idea. If you, the belief that I said before, that the life is unfair and that other people have advantages I don't have, if you believe that, you will notice the things about life that are unfair, and you'll filter out and not notice, for instance, the things that are happening that might be beneficial for you and maybe unfair for somebody else, for that matter. You'll also behave in certain ways that will make it come true. So if you think that life is unfair, you might find yourself attracted to people who tend to act unfairly, or to situations that are inherently unfair, and then you get to say, I knew it. Life is unfair, and I'm on the downside of things. And you don't even realize that you're doing this. I used to have a belief that my mother drilled into me when I was an adolescent, that no woman would ever put up with me.
Wow.
I looked just like my father and had a lot of his mannerisms, which is all probably, genetic. And she divorced him when I was fairly young. And so when I started looking more and more like him to her as I became a teenager, she started getting pissed off at me. And I'm sure she had a good right to, because I was, a little jerk when I was a teenager. but she would say things like, no woman will ever put up with you. You're just like your father. And so she said that so many times that I began to believe it, and then I went out into the world, and I either attracted women that couldn't put up with anybody. Mm-hmm. They'd been abused, they were damaged, they'd been traumatized, they had huge trust issues, and they were always in reaction to any man they were with. And mm-hmm. But I, across a crowded room, I would pick out that woman, and I know that I would because I did it dozens of times, and no matter who I would pick out across a crowded room, they would always end up having pretty much the same attitude, the same kind of past, the same kind of problems would happen, and so on and so forth. If I happened to get attracted to a woman who was relatively healthy, then I would act in a way to make it come true, that no woman would ever put up with me. But I was doing all this without realizing I was doing it. I was doing it unconsciously. So that's one kind of internal process. Knowing that beliefs are self-fulfilling prophecies, knowing that if you believe something, that you will somehow arrange for it to come true, or at least seem to be true, which in terms of your experience of life amounts to the same thing, then maybe it would be smarter for you to say, okay, I want a certain outcome. I want to make more money, or I want, a better career, or I want whatever it is, the outcome you want, mm-hmm. to say, what would a person who achieves that or gets that have to believe in order to get it? And then decide to believe that, despite whatever evidence you might have to the contrary. I don't attract women like I described a moment ago anymore because I changed that belief. But I had to change it in the face of a lot of evidence to the contrary.
So you had to shift your awareness to take in all the other perspectives, or at least a few other perspectives other than this one belief that was, you know, silently and unconsciously driving your life?
Well, I think that I started off thinking that there was something really broken about me. I began to read some things that gave me a new idea, which was that when people do a lot of dysfunctional things in their life and have a lot of emotional problems and seem to create a lot of dysfunctional outcomes, which is what I was doing, it is often because of certain things that happened to them when they were growing up. Something happened to me, and so I began to try to figure out what that was. At this point, I think it's less important what happened to you than it is what you do now. It's just that what happened to you in the past does set up certain internal processes, which then run automatically and generate certain outcomes until you become aware of what they are. And so maybe it would be a good idea to talk about what I mean by becoming aware of them.
Let me see if I've got it straight. If I'm a guy and I'm coming to the realization that there's something not quite there's something driving me, I'm acting out, or I'm taking on certain behaviors,
Or you keep getting the same outcome over and over again, and it's not what you want.
Okay, so I'm going to take responsibility for this. And instead of getting stuck, I'm imagining, like, it's not about getting stuck back there in the story. Well, so-and-so did this to me. It's more about taking on, well, great. So what happened to me? What was the end result? What was the belief that I got? And then having some awareness or choice around that. Is that where we're going?
People do get stuck in thinking, okay, such and such happened to me. And then they use that as an excuse for continuing to do the same old thing. What we're trying to do here is get out of doing the same old thing. And instead of just automatically creating the same outcome over and over again, to intentionally and consciously create the outcome we want. When I say be aware of, many times what people think I mean is to know that they're doing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Most people that have been around a while know if they keep getting a job and it's a crappy job and they hate it, or they know that they keep getting involved with the same woman over and over again, just in a different body, or they know that they keep making bad investments. So they know that they keep starting things and then losing enthusiasm, never finishing them, or whatever it is that you're doing over and over again.
Right.
Most people, after a while, they begin to see the pattern and they say, you know, I keep doing this. I would get up in the morning and by 9 o'clock I would have smoked a joint and I'd be stoned, and then a little bit later I'd go, dang, I know now I'm not going to get anything done because I got stoned right away in the morning, but I'd keep doing it. So knowing that you are doing something is kind of the booby prize. Most people that have been in personal growth stuff for a long time could write a book on their stuff. They've been to enough seminars and therapists and all that stuff that they could write a book about their own screw-up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't keep them from doing it.
Right.
What actually keeps you from doing it is to be able to actually observe the internal processes that are generating it as they happen, knowing where it's... What I did when I finally realized that the reason I kept attracting the same kind of messed up woman into my life and the same results was first of all, I sort of had a talk with myself, and I said, okay, I get it. I keep doing this over and over and over again. And so the next time that I got attracted to someone, I started off the relationship. Now, this sounds like sort of negative thinking or something, but I think it's just more like realistic observation, really.
Okay.
I started off by saying, okay, I know where this is going. I've done this several dozen times now with different women. I know what's going to happen. And then instead of doing what I'd done before, which was kind of rationalizing away the red flags, and so this time I just watched And as the whole thing was going on, there were different little things that she would do or say, and different things that I would do or say or feel or whatever, different little disputes that came up, and different stuff that I, you know, stuff that I recognized. And I'd go, okay, this is how I do it. This is, I can see exactly how, where this is going. Mm. And I can see the little steps that I've been blind to before about where it's going. Mm. And what happened was that a couple of months into this relationship, I remember we were going out on a date and we were driving along and something started happening in the car. I can't remember the specifics of it anymore, but I just ended up getting fed up and I said, I can't do this anymore. And I turned around, took her home. What I'm really saying is, this is sort of one of the laws of awareness in a way, is that when you are doing something that is not resourceful for you, mm-hmm. but you do it with awareness, you can't keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just falls away. So here I was really watching myself doing this, knowing where it was going to go. And at a certain point, I just said, I can't do this anymore. And I just had to turn the car around, take her home, and end the thing. And the amazing thing that happened was that from that point on, I began to attract and be attracted to a completely different kind of woman. And in fact, before, every woman I'd ever been with, they had had big trust issues, and I'd had to convince them that I was trustworthy, mm-hmm. that I really cared about them and all this. I didn't even know that the world was full of women who already felt trusting toward the men they were with, mm-hmm. and that I didn't have to keep doing that.
Wow.
I didn't even know those women existed, but somehow after going through this process with awareness, I suddenly started seeing those women and being attracted to them, and they were attracted to me. And it completely changed my life. We could be talking about whether you make bad investments or whether you hang out with, you know, get attracted to hang out with friends and then find out the friends screw you or mm-hmm. get you into trouble in some way. Or I mean, there's no matter what it is in life, if there's some outcome that keeps happening, there's something you're doing unconsciously to generate it, and you're probably in denial of it. Once you really get what you're doing and observe the whole thing as it unfolds, it becomes impossible to keep doing it.
One thing that I was present to, and I want to clarify, is that you said you were watching it. I didn't get that you were efforting, that there was, I was just watching myself go through these situations, these scenarios with this woman. And after a while, I just couldn't tolerate the watching of it anymore, or, you know, going along for the ride. There wasn't, so then I started doing this and I efforted that. It was really just you mindfully watching what was going on. Is that true?
That's a very good point. This wasn't me trying to not do it. I was just going along and doing it, the same thing I always did, but I was just observing it in a way that I had not done before. Mm. I was fully aware of where it was going to end up because I'd seen it happen so many times, and I had finally sort of kicked myself in the ass to the point where I said, okay, quit fooling yourself. This is what you do in relationships, and this is where they go. So then I just got really curious about it, and I wanted to watch how I did it. You bring up a really good point, because there is a part of every person that if you watch whatever's going on with awareness, there's a part of us that knows exactly how to look at all the variables moment by moment, evaluate them, and figure out what the most resourceful thing to do is. It does not involve any kind of linear analysis or anything like that. It's a much more intuitive part of you that somehow under the surface looks at everything and figures out what to do. And that's the part that said, I can't do this anymore. But a more sophisticated version of this, which is to become aware not just of your beliefs, but a whole lot of other internal processes that are going on, which would include beliefs, values, which are just whatever is important to you. Values are the source of motivation. So if you aren't motivated by something, it's because it's not a value. In other words, it's not important to you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we have this idea that something should be important to us because our parents told us, or society told us, or somebody else, peer group pressure or something, told us it should be important. But it actually isn't. And then we wonder why we're not motivated by it. If something isn't important, you will not pay attention to it. You won't notice it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what you're not noticing is some really important information that maybe somebody else is noticing, and they're getting a much different result than you are because they're noticing things. Another general category of this would be how you focus your attention. Just as beliefs are tend to come true, just they are self-fulfilling prophecies. What you focus on, the internal representations you make, tend to be self-fulfilling prophecies too.
Okay.
So it's like if you say to a little kid as they're going out the door to go to school, don't lose your mittens. In order to process that sentence, the child has to make a picture inside of losing their mittens.
Mm.
And it makes it more likely that they're going to lose their mittens. Now, a lot of people are sort of telling themselves, in a way, don't lose your mittens all the time. They're saying, don't fuck this up. Don't say the wrong thing. Don't make a mistake. People are either talking to themselves about what they don't want, or they are picturing what they don't want. Now, the intention they have is very likely a positive intention. In other words, if you say to yourself, I don't want to be poor, you're not wanting to be poor. You're wanting to not be poor. You're wanting to be rich.
Uh-huh.
The part of your mind, though, that processes this stuff is very literal. So if you make lots of pictures inside of not being poor, you will figure out ways to make that happen. If you're focusing on, which means making internal representations of, what you don't want, what you're worried about, what you want to avoid, what you're afraid of, you are more likely to get it, particularly if you do it a lot and you do it over and over again. So if you are aware of these internal representations and you can observe yourself making them, you can notice when you're doing this. And just like in the example I gave with women, when you do something that is not resourceful, in this case, make internal representations of what you don't want, and do it with awareness, there's a part of you inside that intuitively knows this is a bad idea, and it becomes really hard to do it.
Okay.
The problem with this is that these internal representations are quite unconscious for most people, and it takes a bit of practice to, you have to have some sort of a daily practice that you go through where you gradually become more and more aware of all this stuff you're doing in your head and observing how it actually very directly creates how you feel in each moment, how you behave, what and whom you find yourself being attracted to, and what and whom you give off unconscious cues to so that you attract them. This might sound sort of tedious or maybe overly intellectual or like, why would I want to do this? But there's a number of reasons why you would want to do it. First of all, it's what's determining your life. And when people that do gain control over this by becoming aware of it become super powerful, super effective. So the rewards for doing it are huge. Also, it actually turns out to be really fun to do this. It really, when you start getting inside your mind and seeing how it works and seeing how it's actually generating how you feel, how you behave, what you attract, and all that stuff that I mentioned a minute ago, you start saying, wow, this is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I have found sort of the key to how my life is happening.
Yeah, I could just imagine where I'm if all of my energy is going out, why is it the world doing this and doing that and making it about the outside? Suddenly the key is, oh my gosh, it's happening right here. All the thoughts, all the internal dialogue, how I'm seeing things are affecting everything in my life. I have the key. I'm in the driver's seat, so to speak.
That is what happened. There are random acts in the world. There are other people out there, several billion of them last time I heard, that also have their own agenda. And so, there are things out there you don't have control over or as much control over. However, it turns out that when you control the inside, you gain enough control that you can have a huge, huge influence on what's happening, a really, really large influence on what's happening. You tend to attract less situations where some random event is going to mess you up. When some random event that you don't want does happen to come into your life, people that have developed this ability that I'm talking about seem to be able to look at it and find some sort of a opportunity in it, whereas people that are doing it unconsciously often just use that as a reason to quit or get pissed off or whatever.
Right.
And then they go off and do the same old thing again.
So persons with this ability, something quote-unquote random happens, and I've developed this practice, I'm able to look at it and say, what's the gift in this? How am I going to use this? What's the opportunity here?
When I started my company, Centerpoint Research, I was mostly advertising by running full-page ads in national magazines. And, you know, that worked reasonably well, and I, you know, made decent money doing that. But at a certain point, they kept raising the price of the ads, and for whatever reason, the ads stopped pulling quite as well. So the combination of those two things made the advertising kind of dwindle in effectiveness. Mm-hmm. And at first I just said, oh no, I don't, that's the only thing I know how to do. This is a drag. But what happened was that forced me to look around and see, well, are there other ways that I could bring in business, which I was not motivated to look at before. Now, if I had been more unconscious, I might have just quit. But instead, I said, okay, there's got to be another way to do this. So I began looking at other things. And then I discovered that I could rent mailing lists and mail things to these mailing lists. And I found out when I started doing that, that worked a lot better than running the ads. At a certain point, that didn't work as well anymore. And that's when I discovered that if I went to the person whose mailing list it was and said, if you will endorse my product, after I've convinced you that it's worth endorsing, and we have a cover letter in the mailing from you endorsing it, I'll pay you a percentage of the profits. That really worked well. And every time things sort of started to fall off, what looked like a disaster always ended up turning into an opportunity. But I had to kind of look around for it too. Right. So that's what people who are aware tend to do.
Great.
Everyone that is going along unconsciously, having these unconscious processes run automatically, is not failing. There are lots of people who are successful with unconscious processes. And the reason they're successful is because when they were growing up, they had good parenting, good mentoring, et cetera, and their internal processes, as they were being developed, as they grew up, developed in a pretty resourceful way. So they might be generating pretty resourceful outcomes, but they're doing it with processes that they really aren't able to be aware of.
Okay.
What I'm suggesting is that even if your internal processes are working pretty well, if you become aware of them, then they really work well. So that there's, you know, you could be unconscious and be somewhere in the spectrum from being a total loser to being a total winner, but even more beneficial than either of those, than the winner side of being unconscious, would be to become aware of this stuff and learn how to operate it intentionally and consciously.
Now I have choice around it. And I have the choice to continue doing what I was doing before. It may be really painful to continue doing, as you say, or I can now have other things available to me. I may see things a little differently and act accordingly.
Exactly. First of all, you can just start going into your head and watching. You could do that. And eventually, if you did that, over time, you would become aware of things. It would be kind of like if you... let's say you were going to go to Chicago and you'd never been there before. You could just go there, get off the plane, and start driving around or walking around. And over a certain amount of time, you'd probably learn Chicago pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But it would take quite a while. Now, on the other hand, if somehow you were able to be more aware of Chicago because you had aerial photos of every single intersection, you had people that had been there before who were telling you about it, you had some way to learn all about it,
mm-hmm.
Without tediously walking down every street, then you would gain that awareness a lot faster. Well, in life, the corollary to that kind of electronic awareness would be to do practices that people have discovered over thousands of years that do make you more aware. And the main practice is meditation. When people meditate, they become more aware. They begin to notice things, their perspective enlarges and takes in more, and they begin to notice things that they weren't noticing before. Whatever you are doing unconsciously without awareness, it's kind of like you are it. It's who you are. Mm-hmm. Whereas once you become aware of it, you go from being it
mm-hmm.
unconsciously to having it. Mm-hmm. So what I'm talking about is a deeper level of awareness even than that, and being able to, it just takes some practice. What I'm talking about is offering yourself opportunities to notice things that up to now you've been unconscious about. You've been doing them automatically. It's kind of the difference between being on autopilot and being in direct control
mm-hmm.
of what's happening.
And I'm hearing you use words like notice and watching. There's an active quality to it, but there's not a controlling aspect to it. There's just taking, like, I'm just imagining taking a couple steps back and watching myself go through this interaction with somebody and not necessarily be gripping it and I need to do this and do that. It's kind of what we talked about before, but just this noticing and watching is enough.
That's the cool part about this, is that although you certainly can exercise intentionality, in terms of figuring out, should I do this or should I do that, figuring out whether a particular course of action is resourceful or not resourceful, there's a part of you that figures that out automatically. I find a lot of people, before they learn about this, don't really know that there is another way to approach things other than through linear analysis. A lot of the people come to me, they just analyze the hell out of everything, and they get nowhere, and they just go down these long, this labyrinth inside their head, but nothing ever really comes to a conclusion where they feel like, okay, I figured it out.
Yeah, I could imagine that somebody who's new to this practice would then get into a kind of an analysis paralysis where everything is under the microscope and they could actually freeze up from too much information. But you're saying that once we allow ourselves to bring this naked awareness to what we're doing, we actually start to tap this deeper intuitive side that already knows what to do. There's not a thing to do, it just already knows.
Learning to observe all these internal processes. First, people think, good grief, how can I, I'm making pictures constantly all day long.
Mm-hmm.
How could anybody notice those pictures, also notice what you're saying to yourself, plus pay attention to what's going on outside, and do anything?
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough attention. to do all this.
Right.
Well, it's the same thing as when you first start driving. There actually is not enough attention to pay attention to everything that you need to do while you're driving either. That's why your dad kept saying, watch out for the curb or whatever, because you probably weren't watching out for it because there's not enough attention available.
Got it.
So at a certain point, as you begin to observe these things in your head, it becomes second nature to notice them. And as long as they're going along in a resourceful way, they just sort of go along. But if something happens that isn't resourceful, a little alarm goes off inside. You deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's only kind of tedious at first. Just like driving, learning to drive is tedious at first.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's tough and it's tedious at first, but it becomes second nature, and then it actually begins to serve us as we're moving around out in the world. This ability chimes in whenever something that is not resourceful is happening. Okay.
So the first thing I think that people gives you a leg up on doing this is meditating. Because when you meditate, you just, in general, become more aware.
And let's just kind of describe what meditation is, because I imagine some of our listeners might be thinking of, you know, they have no idea what we're talking about. Some kind of hippies sitting around on the cushions and smoking, you know, with incense and smoking dope or whatever. What are we actually talking about here when you say meditation?
I've tried to focus on, okay, what is really going on in the brain when people meditate? And which parts of the things that people do really have anything to do with getting the effect? And which parts are, you know, not necessary? Now, you know, if somebody wants to get into some Eastern thing, fine. But you don't need to do that. I mean, a famous Harvard researcher, he did a lot of research on meditation, and he found that instead of saying some, you know, Sanskrit mantra, that people that just sat with their eyes closed and said, one, you know, just mm-hmm. said the word one to themselves inside, mm-hmm. silently, over and over again, instead of some, you know, mantra from Sanskrit, had exactly the same things happen.
Hmm.
They had the same reduction in stress level. They had the same changes in stress hormones. They had the same increases in awareness. They had same increases in their ability to be in good moods and all kinds of things.
Great.
That a lot of the trappings were not essential.
What we're essentially doing is separating the practice from kind of the cultural or the wrapping of the practice, that in essence the practice does this thing to calm the mind, to calm the brain, and to make it sharper, correct?
Exactly. And what happens a lot is that, you know, some of the people who meditate also have some kind of airy-fairy views about the world. And so it's very easy for people who are not particularly interested in meditation or have never done it to look at meditation and sort of say, well, these sort of hippy-dippy types do it. Therefore, it's hippy-dippy.
Right.
And the truth is that though those kinds of people may have adopted meditation, that doesn't mean that you have to be hippy-dippy and have some of these sort of squirrely views, or that you can't take the parts of it that actually work and use it to be more effective as a human being.
Okay.
And so that's what I've tried to do. And in fact, what I did is I got to the point where I said, in the 1970s, they identified what the electrical patterns in the brain were that meditators were making when they meditated. There's certain, you know, all day long, your brain is making these, creating these, all these electrical signals. And there's a certain characteristic electrical brainwave signature that goes along with meditation. Then, completely independently of that, another guy figured out a way using certain combinations of sounds, very precise sine wave tones, pure tones, that were delivered to the brain through headphones, so that you could put a certain tone into one ear, which went to the opposite side of the brain, and vice versa. And this guy found out, that, as a researcher at Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York, that you could change the electrical patterns in a person's brain through this method.
Okay.
And so I and a few other people said, gee, could we create the brainwave patterns of meditation, and what would happen? So way back in the mid-80s, I created a version of this kind of technology that I call Holosync, which is kind of an electronic or technological way to induce super deep meditation without spending 10 years, you know, learning how to do a technique that creates the same thing.
So the Holosync accelerates this process for the average person.
It not only does it accelerate it, but actually we can create brainwave patterns that even very few, even advanced meditators are able to create. And if they do, they can only create them for a few moments here and there. We can put people in, I mean, we sort of tongue-in-cheek say, with Holosync, you can meditate like a Zen monk at the push of a button.
Wow.
And in a way, you actually can. Whether a person meditates just by doing something like I described earlier, repeating something inside one, or something like that, or just observes their breath going in and then observes their breath going out and just keeps their attention on their breath, which is just a very simple way to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
You could certainly do that, or you can use Holosync, which really accelerates the whole process. And what happens when you do either of these is that you do become more aware. You become aware a lot faster with Holosync because it really accelerates it. And at the end of this conversation, we can tell people how they can get a free demo CD of Holosync so they can experience it if they
absolutely
want to. But the first point I wanted to make is that there are things that people have learned to do over many centuries that do increase awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do one of these things, it gives you a leg up because it makes this whole process a lot easier. And then the second thing is that you need some sort of kind of structured way to go inside your head. If you feel really motivated, for instance, and you could then notice, well, what kind of an internal picture am I making that sort of represents being motivated to me? You could look at that picture and then if I told you, for instance, to make this picture really small and really dark, what would happen is that when you did that, the motivation would go away.
Hmm.
And then I would say, well, okay, now make it this way it was before. Make the picture big and bright and close and so on. And then I might even say, make it even brighter, make it even bigger. And you might find that the feeling of motivation increased even over the way it was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And you begin to realize that, oh, there's stuff I'm doing in my head, and when I do it in a different way, it changes how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, I pick motivation because it's a fairly important one, because motivation obviously leads to behavior. So if your motivation changes, your behavior is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
If your behavior changes, your results are going to change. If you change these filters that you use to decide what to pay attention to or what not to pay attention to, that is going to change what the world means to you in many ways. It's going to change what resources you notice. It's going to change the raw material you have in order to get certain ideas that might help you to accomplish things. There's all this stuff going on inside.
But through practice, we can actually learn to affect these aspects or these things, and that's going to have a direct impact on the quality of our life?
Well, and the reason it has a direct impact is because this is exactly what creates the quality of your life. Also external things create it too.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the part you have the most control over. The external things you have a limited amount of control over because they represent a whole bunch of other people's intentions and actions, which you could influence, but probably aren't going to ever be in control over.
Yeah, that's a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, you can have some effect on it, but for the most part, other people are going to do what the hell they want to do,
mm-hmm.
and you have to adapt to it. The part you do have control over is all these internal processes, and luckily, if you learn how to operate them consciously, it gives you so much control, so much power, that you can pretty much do anything you want or create anything you want in your life, despite the fact that the world is all messed up out there. What I find is that if people make a list of the most important areas in their life and then start to pay attention to what internal representations they make when they think of each of these important areas of life, the areas of life that are not working very well are invariably the areas of life in which they tend to unconsciously focus on what they don't want. And as soon as people, you know, see this, they go, oh my God, no wonder my relationships suck. No wonder I can't make any money. Mm-hmm. But this other area of life seems to work pretty well because I am focusing on what I do want in those areas. Mm-hmm. And they start to see this level of stuff that was going on all the time, but they didn't see the connection. You could take a 3x5 card, and every time you caught yourself focusing on something you don't want, in other words, every time you notice yourself making a picture of something you don't want or having a thought, you know, internal dialogue about something you don't want, you could take out that card and make a little hash mark on it. In other words, keep score. And at the end of the day, what I did is I transferred that to some graph paper. So, okay, today I caught myself 32 times thinking of what I don't want. And then the next day I would do it too. And I did that for several weeks. And I just sort of made a little graph of it. And, you know, it doesn't really matter so much how many times I noticed myself doing it. It's just that after a few weeks of doing that, it became really difficult for me to make internal representations of what I don't want without noticing it. Some people tend to pay attention when they look at something to what is the same about it. And other people pay attention to what is different about it. Some people notice samenesses and filter out differences, and some people notice differences and filter out same. Now, you might say, well, so what? But this is actually a very important filter because this filter really contains the key to genius. In case anybody who's listening is interested in what makes a genius, there's really two ways to be a genius.
Okay.
One is to notice connections between things or new ways that things can go together that other people haven't noticed,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, an inventor might do that, mm-hmm. or a poet might do that, or a writer or something. You and I both know Ken Wilber. Ken mm-hmm. Wilber has noticed patterns in things and how different ideas and things go together in ways that other people had not noticed.
Right.
So all those are ways of noticing patterns, which is a type of noticing sameness. On the other hand, you could also be a genius by having a very highly developed ability to notice differences, to make distinctions between things, to see how things are not the same. Whether you notice sameness or difference is very important. In a way, some of this is just experience, wisdom. This is why people that are in their 50s or 60s often are way better at doing certain things than people that are in their 20s, just because they have just noticed things like this over many years.
Right.
But you don't need to wait for 40 years to do this either. I have a course that takes you through the parts of it that are really pertinent to what I'm talking about, which is probably a faster way for people to get a grip on all this stuff. But then essentially what you do is you take the first one, which is beliefs in the course that I teach, and you figure out what you believe in all the important areas of life, and then you begin to watch yourself believe whatever you're believing, and you begin to see how what you're doing works and what outcomes are being created by that belief. And you gradually go through all the stuff you believe and take it from being unconscious to being conscious. You go through all the things, the ways you're filtering things. You go through all the ways you're making internal representations, and so on. And gradually over time, as you play with this, which is actually pretty fun, really, because you're seeing stuff about yourself that is fascinating and highly useful to your life. But over time, you get more and more and more so that you can't do anything inside without doing it with awareness.
I appreciate the spirit of play that you bring to this development, because personal development can be one of those things. Once we become aware of how unconscious we've been, or of what is possible, it can have this feeling of a burden, like, oh my gosh, I have so far to go, I have such a hill to climb. And one of the things I'm taking away from this conversation as we wrap it up now is that it's a play with it. Find out who you are. What are these beliefs you have, and have fun with it. Have fun.
Exactly. One of the things that does happen when people do this, when people enter into doing this kind of process, is, like, for instance, they start looking at their beliefs, and when they finish kind of doing an overview and writing down as many things they can think of that they believe in certain key areas, a lot of times people say, oh my God, I am a fucking loser. Jesus Christ, look at this. No wonder my life sucks. And they get depressed about it.
Right.
And what I say is, no. Go down to the bakery, buy a cake, get a bottle of champagne, go home, have a party, because now you have noticed something that has been unconsciously messing you up. And now that you've noticed it, you've taken the first step to doing something to straighten it out. And all you have to do is keep putting one foot in front of the other, and you will straighten it out. And the people that do this become what a lot of people would refer to as super conscious. They become really powerful.
I'm inspired, and I'm wondering where can we point the listeners to find out more about the Holosync demo, as well as this online course that you're talking about?
Anybody that wants to experience Holosync and find out, you know, what I'm talking about with this more technological way to meditate, can go to centerpoint.com. Centerpoint has an E on the end. It's just the word center and the word point, with an E on the end, all one word, centerpoint.com. And there's stuff all over the website about how to get this free demo.
Okay.
You can take a free preview lesson of this online course by going to centerpoint.com/life, L-I-F-E, /preview.
Okay.
And there's a free preview lesson. It'll go into some of this stuff a little more deeply than we've been able to do on this call.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. I think that it's fantastic that someone that's listening right now can dive right in. It's not something they have to wait for, or, you know, climb some mountain. It's something they can go do right now. So
there's a price to pay to master this stuff, but the results are so worth it. You know, I went from being pretty much an abject, unhappy loser to being a multi-millionaire and hobnobbing with, you know, some of the smartest, most aware people in the world. And it happened because I did this stuff.
Wow. Bill Harris, thank you so much for being on The New Man. And I'd love to have you back on the show again. And maybe we could do a follow-up. What's next for the guy that's been doing Holosync for a while, or he's been doing these courses?
You know, there's a lot more things that I could talk about that I know that the listeners would find really interesting.
Go on to thenewmanpodcast.com. If you didn't get those web addresses, you can find them there on our site. So, Bill, thank you again.
You bet.
Visit triplinear.com and let us know what you think of The New Man Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.